upholding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captain of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. Were included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And greetings from Technocracy News and Trends. Patrick Wood here, Editor-in-Chief. And I want to start out this particular broadcast by saying that the articles that I pick for Technocracy News and Trends every day sometime may seem a little bit oblique to you. This is not about doom and gloom. This is not about just presenting things that are shocking to people, but rather this is to showcase the mind of a technocrat and also the agenda of technocracy. Technocracy has two aspects to it, of course. One is it's an economic system as expressed by sustainable development, green economy, Green New Deal, etc. But technocrats are those people who view their scientific prowess to be able to engineer society in a way that they see fit. This is not the way you and I might see fit, but it's the way they see fit. And they believe that their engineering skills and scientific skills can be used to engineer society and make humanity better, and do something to improve the lot of everybody everywhere. We know that's not true, but that's what's in their head. So when I present this first article to you, don't laugh. You might cry, but don't laugh. The headline of the story is World's First Human Composting Facility Coming to Seattle in 2021. Now, you know what composting is. Perhaps you have a garden in your backyard, and you take the organic trash out of your kitchen and you put it in the composter and you put some dirt in it perhaps and roll it around for a couple, 3 weeks. And lo and behold, you have some very rich soil that you then take out of your composter and spread around your garden and kind of put it back into everything. Well, now somebody has decided that they can do this with human bodies as well. Yeah, forget the lettuce, forget the celery stalks, forget the Brussels sprouts and all those other things that get left over from a meal. Now old Uncle Sid can be part of your vegetable garden out in the back. I wrote at the top of this article, Earth Worship is Complete, by offering your dead body back to nature as compost in the Death Care Revolution. That's a quote. All that's missing now is the euthanasia center to hasten the process, as in the 1973 cult movie Soylent Green. This article states, in a move hailed as a positive step by environmentalists, Washington, that is Washington State, became the first U.S. state to, quote, legalize the composting of human bodies in May of this year. Only in Washington State. The article continues, and now the Evergreen State will become home to the first human composting facility in 2021, thanks to Katrina Spade, founder and CEO of Recompose, that's the name of her company, after the legislation she helped enact goes into effect in May 2020. According to the website, Spade founded the revolutionary company with the goal of offering, quote, natural organic reduction to the public, close quote, a system that converts human remains into soil as an alternative to cremation or burial. Recompose's website explains the benefits of natural organic reduction, and this is a quote. By converting human remains into soil, we minimize waste, avoid polluting groundwater with embalming fluid, and prevent the emissions of CO2 from cremation and from the manufacturing of caskets, headstones, and grave liners. By allowing organic processes to transform our bodies and those of our loved ones into a useful soil amendment, we help to strengthen our relationship to the natural cycles while enriching the earth, close quote. In November, around 75 people attended what was described by the Seattle Times as, quote, a housewarming party for a funeral home where bodies would not be burned or buried, but laid in individual vessels to become clean, usable compost, close quote. Spade told the crowd, made up of investors, doctors, architects, funeral directors, legislators, and lawyers, quote, "You are all members of the death care revolution," close quote. When all is said and done, the process will yield about a cubic yard of soil per person. The soil can be taken home by friends or family and used to grow a tree or a garden. Remaining soil will be used on 640 acres of conservation land in southern Washington that will one day become an ecologically sustainable village. In contrast, those who have opted to be cremated as a means to save money or take up less space geographically have inadvertently left a burden on their family members, Spade explained. Quote, "These days, some families regard even ashes from cremation as a burden, not a joy. As in, we've had these ashes in the garage for 6 years, and we're creating a cubic yard of soil." While Recompose is not yet up and running, the company is aiming for a $5,500 price tag for its natural organic reduction services, while a green burial in the state of Washington averages around $6,000. Cremation can range anywhere from $1,000 to $7,000, and a conventional burial in a cemetery can set you back at least $8,000. The idea may seem outlandish or uncomfortable to some, but Recompose is more than just a pipe dream. As an architecture student, Spade became interested in the funeral industry back in 2012. She quickly delved into the idea of, quote, "environmentally sustainable, urban-focused method of disposition of the dead," close quote, after seeing a lack of environmental ethic in both cremation and burial industries. In 2014, Spade's idea took a turn toward reality when she received the Echoing Green Climate Fellowship. With the funding that followed, she founded the nonprofit Urban Death Project and began working with soil science researchers, law professionals, and those in the funeral industry to lay the groundwork for a revolutionary system of death care the world has never seen. And indeed, the world has never seen such a thing as simply composting dead bodies. Well, I suppose back in the medieval days, some bodies might have just been thrown out in the field and left to decompose right there on the spot. But in the modern age, this is indeed a first. So now truly, if you have your loved ones composted, you may have to put up some signs in your backyard if you use their compost on the garden and the trees and the flowers. You could put a sign on a tree, Aunt Mary, and a sign on a flower bed, Uncle Sid. It gets a little crazy. But as I said, only in Washington State and only invented by the mind of a technocrat. Nobody asked for this. Nobody may even want it for all we know. But I expect there will be enough environmental crazy people that will say, this is a wonderful idea. I'm going to compost all my family from now on. Well, we'll leave that story behind. The next story is a little bit more serious, and that is that China is now requiring mandatory face scans for all phone users. You want to buy a phone? Say you are a young person in China and you're just becoming of age and it's time for you to have your own phone as you go off to school or perhaps to university. Well, that's all fine and good if you have the money to buy one. But the government says, you want that phone? Scan your face first and send it in to us so you can be registered. I wrote at the top of this, as a technocracy, China will turn to screws on data collection until they possess every conceivable piece of information on every citizen, including DNA and psychographic behavioral profile. This is the, quote, science of social engineering that was specified by technocracy even as far back as 1932. They need all this data in order to control the entirety of society. This article states, China will require telecom operators to collect face scans when registering new phone users at offline outlets starting Sunday, according to the country's Information Technology Authority, as Beijing continues to tighten cyberspace controls. Can we say tighten the screws? Probably so. It continues, in September, China's Industry and Information Technology Ministry issued a notice on safeguarding the legitimate rights and interests of citizens online, which laid out rules for enforcing real-time registration. The notice said telecom operators should use, quote, artificial intelligence and other technical means to verify people's identities when they take a new phone number. A China Unicom customer service representative told AFP that the December 1 portrait matching requirement means customers registering for a new phone number may have to record themselves turning their head and blinking. In next steps, the ministry will continue to increase supervision and inspection and strictly promote the management of real-time registration for phone users, said the September notice. Though the Chinese government has pushed for real-time registration for phone users since at least 2013, meaning ID cards are linked to new phone numbers, the move to leverage AI comes as facial recognition technology gains traction across China, where the tech is used for everything from supermarket checkouts to surveillance. Online, Chinese social media users reacted with a mix of support and worry over the December 1 facial verification notice, with some voicing concerns their biometric data could be leaked or sold. "This is a bit too much," wrote one user on Twitter-like Weibo, commenting under an article about the new rules. "Control and then more control," posted another. I dare say that whoever posted that will be identified by the Chinese regime as a troublemaker, an outlier. Their social credit score is probably going to take a dive. Well, China's draconian and dystopian system is coming to America like an express train. If you can't see it yet, you simply aren't paying attention. This is not the kind of system that America wants, much less needs. It certainly has never been presented to the American public as any kind of a viable option. And if it were, I dare say 98% of Americans would reject it outright. And I'm talking Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, Independents, and everything in between, and everything on both sides. Everybody would reject this kind of draconian, dystopian system. The last story today is a little bit of a flashback, but not beyond 2019. The title to this story is Global Warming Swindle, a Scheme to Redistribute Wealth. My comments on this article: this is a non-U.S. view and analysis of global warming as being a swindle to redistribute wealth on a global scale. Globalization and global warming are intricately linked, driving the world into the new economic system of sustainable development, aka technocracy. The article states, as the science behind man-made global warming has been increasingly discredited, the story has changed. Now, it's not about saving the environment, but about redistributing wealth, says a leading member of the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. That's the IPCC. His name is Otmar Edenhofer, a co-chair of the IPCC's Working Group 3 and a lead author of the IPCC's fourth assessment report in 2007, its latest one, by the way, recently said, quote, "One has to free oneself from the illusion that international climate policy is environmental policy. This has almost nothing to do with environmental policy anymore," close quote. Edenhofer told a German news outlet, that is NZZAM Sonntag, quote, "Basically, it's a big mistake to discuss climate policy separately from the major theme of globalization. The climate summit in Cancun at the end of the month is not a climate conference, but one of the largest economic conferences since the Second World War. First of all, developed countries have basically expropriated the atmosphere of the world community," says Edenhofer. "Thus, the developers of coal and oil should pay reparations in the form of global carbon emission rights and taxes." Investors Business Daily commented, quote, "UN warmongers are seeking to impose a global climate reparations tax on everything from airline flights and international shipping to fuel and financial transactions. The Cancun Agreement set up a, quote, green climate fund to administer assistance to poor nations suffering from floods and drought due to global warming. The European Union, Japan, and the United States have led pledges of $100 billion per year for poor nations up to 2020, plus $30 billion in immediate assistance. The agreement says it, quote, recognizes that deep cuts in global greenhouse gas emissions are required according to science and calls for urgent action to cap temperature rises. But this chart gives lie to such claims. You can clearly see that on a multi-million year scale, global temperatures have been confined to a steady band unrelated to even huge changes in atmospheric carbon dioxide. Graph is included in the article, by the way. Does this graph reveal any need for urgent action according to science? Yet, at the Cancun conference, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon warned, quote, nature will not wait. Science warns that the window of opportunity to prevent uncontrolled climate change will soon close, close quote. The window of opportunity that is going to close is not a scientific one, but a political one, because more and more people are realizing that global warming alarmism is based on phony science and outright lies. Foremost in the struggle to bring essential scientific truths to light on this issue is the Non-Governmental International Panel on Climate Change, the NIPCC, founded and directed by the distinguished atmospheric physicist S. Fred Singer, with assistance from climate experts in 16 countries who donated their time and efforts. The NIPCC produced a massive, extensively illustrated 880-page report, quote, out of concern that the IPCC was provoking irrational fear of anthropogenic global warming, in the words of Dr. Singer. The report references 4,000 research papers in peer-reviewed scientific journals that contradict IPCC conclusions, but were not used by the IPCC, though it claims to be the definitive source of climate research. The entire report can be downloaded free from the Heartland Institute website, by the way. I shall discuss only one item from the NIPCC report, but it is a fundamental to the whole carbon dioxide greenhouse hypothesis of global warming. Worldwide, there are 20-some GCMs, that is, general circulation models, for computer modeling of global climate change. They all agree, for sound theoretical reasons, that greenhouse gases cannot warm the Earth directly. They must first warm the atmosphere, which in turn warms the surface of the Earth. So the atmosphere must be warmer than the Earth's surface. The NIPCC summary report explains, quote, climate models all predict that if GH gases, that's greenhouse gases, are driving climate change, there will be a unique fingerprint in the form of a warming trend increasing with altitude in the tropical troposphere, the region of the atmosphere to about 15 kilometers. Climate changes due to solar variability or other known natural factors will not yield this characteristic pattern. Only sustained greenhouse warming will do so. The models show this hotspot perfectly, but it is missing in actual observations, which show instead this area to be cooler than the Earth's surface. The summary report states in boldface type, quote, this mismatch of observed and calculated fingerprints clearly falsifies the hypothesis of anthropogenic global warming, close quote. The summary report also notes the IPCC has been disingenuous about solar influences on the climate. The demonstration of solar influence on climate is now overwhelming. There is now little doubt that solar wind variability is a primary cause of climate change on a decadal timescale. The disclosure of thousands of emails from climate scientists in November 2009 became known as the ClimateGate scandal. It raised concerns about the validity of global warming predictions and the integrity and professional misconduct of some of the world's leading climate scientists. Even before ClimateGate, some important scientists tried to alert the public to the unscientific nature of IPCC procedures and conclusions. These scientists were generally derided as deniers by the news media and opinion makers. The IPCC regularly submits its reports to its expert reviewers panel. As you might expect, most of its appointments to this panel have been supporters of global warming. A few non-believers have been included to give the appearance of balance, but their comments and questions have been routinely ignored as the IPCC focuses on what it claims to be the quote-unquote consensus view. Only one person has been on every IPCC expert reviewers panel, and that man is Dr. Vincent Gray. He submitted a very large number of comments to IPCC drafts, including 1,898 for the final draft of the 2007 report. Here are some of his comments from a letter he wrote on March 9, 2008. This is a direct quote now. "Over the period, I have made an intensive study of the data and procedures used by IPCC contributors throughout their whole study range. Right from the beginning, I have had difficulty with this procedure. Penetrating questions often ended without any answer. Comments on the IPCC drafts were rejected without explanation, and attempts to pursue the matter were frustrated indefinitely. Over the years, as I have learned more about the data and procedures of the IPCC, I have found increasing opposition by them to providing explanations until I have been forced to the conclusion that for significant parts of the work of the IPCC, the data collection and scientific methods employed are unsound. Resistance to all efforts to try and discuss or rectify these problems has convinced me that normal scientific procedures are not only rejected by the IPCC, but that this practice is endemic and was part of the organization from the very beginning. I therefore consider that the IPCC is fundamentally corrupt. The only reform I could envisage would be its abolition. The flagship set of data promoted by the IPCC are the figures showing the increase in atmospheric concentration of carbon dioxide. They have manipulated the data in such a way to persuade us, including most scientists, that this concentration is constant throughout the atmosphere." Close quote to the good professor's letter. The article continues, "The models are so full of inaccurately known parameters and equations that it is comparatively easy to fudge an approximate fit to the new climate sequences that might respond. This sort of evidence is the main feature of most of the current promotional lectures. By drawing attention to these obvious facts, I have now found myself persona non grata with most of my local professional associations. Surely I am questioning the integrity of these award-winning scientific leaders of the local science establishment. When you get down to it, that is what is involved. Yes, we have to face it. The whole process is a swindle. The IPCC, from the beginning, was given the license to use whatever methods would be necessary to provide quote-unquote evidence that carbon dioxide increases are harming the climate. Even if this involves manipulation of dubious data and using people's opinions instead of science to prove their case, the disappearance of the IPCC in disgrace is not only desirable, but inevitable. Sooner or later, all of us will come to realize that this organization and the thinking behind it is phony. Unfortunately, severe economic damage is likely to be done by its influence before that happens. I suggest that you read this article, perhaps even print it out and save it in a safe place. There may be a day when stuff like this is completely banned from the internet and just disappeared. But interestingly though, this article was written by an organization, not in America, but in Brazil. Yes, they have people in Brazil who have their heads screwed on right as well. And they recognize that the IPCC and the United Nations and all of the propaganda surrounding it is as phony as a $3 bill. Well, in part, we can thank Otmar Edenhofer for blowing the whistle and telling us that global warming really is just one big redistribution of wealth scheme that has nothing to do with environmentalism and everything to do with bringing in the new economic system known as, to them, sustainable development, and known to us and readers of Technocracy News and Trends as technocracy. I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. See you next time.